Welcome to Now, I'm David Byrd.
And I'm Aisha Khalid.
Losing your sight used to mean giving up many things you loved. But there's a group of cyclists who are still on the trails despite visual impairment.
The difference is learning to describe what we're doing. I call it the cruise director. You're trying to describe the sights as you're going on.
There's a new strain of polio that has many doctors and researchers concerned.
Raising children is getting more and more expensive.
The savings that we would have had are now going into our child and our family.
The global population is getting older. What will that mean for the next generation?
And some entrepreneurs use their passion to open a business that has people painting with a twist.
That's all coming up on this Wednesday's edition of Now.
Aisha, do you ride a bicycle?
I wish I could, David. I think I tried to learn it at a little older age.
Yeah?
Yeah, I would love to.
You don't ride then? You don't know how?
No, I don't know how.
Also, then you and your husband have never ridden a tandem bike, like a bicycle
built
for two?
No, but I have considered riding one, you know.
Because really?
Since I cannot, you know, ride the bicycle independently,
right.
This would be a good idea, I think.
Well, you know, in many U.S. cities and elsewhere around the world, the blind are buying tandems and then recruiting sighted partners to get them on the road.
VOA's Roseanne Scrobble meets up with a cycling club that accommodates blind bikers in the Washington suburbs.
Bonnie O'Day and her husband Bob Hart have caught a cab to the house on a quiet tree-lined street where the Tuesday night tandems are meeting. Bonnie has been legally blind since childhood. Bob was blinded by a progressive eye disease and walks with a white cane. Mark Mulligan pulls up with their bike locked into a rack on top of his car.
Okay, this is going to come pivoting out, so.
Mulligan carefully unloads the 3.2-meter-long three-seater to accommodate the couple and himself.
Is there something I have to be careful not
to there's touch? A camera right here, right there. I'm on, so I can lean it towards you.
On the other riding team, Jim Durham suffers from hearing loss. He adjusts a two-way radio headset so he can better hear his partner, Margaret Zelenska, who's blind.
Is this going to work?
Well, you know.
We'll try it. Find out.
Pull around with it until it works.
Can you hear me?
Durham has carefully mapped out the route, one the five riders are familiar with.
We got great weather. We go down Fort Williams, cross Duke Street, take Wheeler Avenue to the Holmes Run Trail. We're going to stop for stop signs. We're going to make sure.
The bikes pick up speed as they move downhill out of the neighborhood. As they approach city streets, they're careful to obey traffic lights and stop signs. They turn onto a bike trail that leads them into a park along the Potomac River. In tandem language, Mulligan is team captain. His job is to make sure there are no surprises for the blind riders that sit behind him. They're called stokers.
So you're supposed to tell them what's coming up, what's going on. The difference is learning to actually describe what we're doing. I call it the cruise director. You're trying to describe the sights as you're going on.
After dozens of tandem rides, the three work together like a well-oiled machine, acutely aware of one another and their surroundings. Hart says the ride is like a choreographed dance.
It just feels great when you've got some speed going and you're going around some curves and you're all in sync. It's really a great feeling. And, you know, you get that breeze, you get a little wind chill, and it cools you right off, and it's just a lot of fun.
How about you, Bob?
I get to be out in nature doing something faster than walking, which is really good. And as I go by things, I get to smell them. I get to experience the wind in my face and the smell of the flowers and a bakery if you happen to go by one.
Like we did today.
Like we did today.
Nearly 3 hours later, the bikers head down the home stretch, tired, hungry, but happy. Just like any cyclist who's just ridden 40 kilometers, says O'Day.
You know, we're not unique in any way. There are a lot of blind people who ride tandems. And of course, when we're riding, the people who are around us don't know that we're vision impaired. So we're just out there doing the regular thing, just like everybody else. and I think that's good.
The teams pull into the driveway where they started their ride. Hart and O'Day dismount and give each other a hug, buoyed by a sense of confidence and camaraderie that they carry back into their daily lives. Roseanne Skirbel, VOA News, Washington.
Fun.
Hey, Mark, give me five.
There we
Thank
go.
You. Good ride.
For a video version of this story, be sure to log on to our website, www.voanews.com.
And let us know your questions or comments by visiting our Facebook page, VOA Asia.
And be sure to follow us on Twitter at NowVOAShow.
Vaccines and public health programs have helped to reduce the number of people who come down with polio.
But a new study says a mutated polio virus that slipped through the vaccine's defenses was behind an unusually lethal recent outbreak. An intensive vaccination campaign was able to stop the 2010 outbreak in the Republic of Congo.
But as VOA's Steve Barragona tells us, research shows new and dangerous strains may emerge as polio eradication nears, and high rates of vaccination are the best available protection.
Polio usually paralyzes its victims. It's not typically fatal. But in the Republic of Congo outbreak, nearly half of the 445 people who got sick with the virus died. And virologist Felix Drexler at the University of Bonn says the patients were unusual in another way.
About half of them remember taking three doses of live vaccine. And that made it even more bizarre because if they had been vaccinated, they shouldn't be sick.
When Drexler and colleagues in Europe and Africa studied the virus, they found it had some never-before-seen mutations in a critical part of its outer coat. Those mutations were in the place where antibodies that fight the virus would normally attach.
And so we thought, wow, maybe that could affect the ability of the antibodies in human blood to neutralize that virus. And yes, it did.
As they report in the Proceedings of the National Academy of Sciences, the researchers tested the virus in Germany against blood samples from people with better than average vaccination coverage.
Up to 30% had to be considered completely unprotected.
The Republic of Congo had been polio-free before the 2010 outbreak. It took four subsequent nationwide immunization drives targeting every man, woman, and child to stop the mutated virus. Drexler says the effort worked because just about everyone got vaccinated, and with the most potent form of the vaccine. The virus has not been seen since, though Drexler says it may still be lurking out there somewhere. And he added there may be others that also can evade the vaccine's protection. Although the vaccine works, Drexler says,
the question that the experts are asking, so is the vaccine good enough to enable us to eradicate poliovirus?
Experts say polio eradication is in its final stages. There have been fewer than 150 cases anywhere in the world this year, and the virus is found regularly in just three countries. Virologist Olin Kew with the U.S. Centers for Disease Control and Prevention says the problem in Congo was not the vaccine. It was civil unrest in the 1990s and early 2000s that had disrupted vaccination campaigns. He notes that the vaccine has eliminated the polio virus everywhere it has been used.
What happened in Congo was it hadn't been used for quite a long period of time, and a susceptible group opened up. And then when the virus introduced, it had devastating effects.
More potent vaccines might be helpful, says Associate Director Walter Orenstein of the Emory Vaccine Center. But, he added, eradication is very close, and the tools at hand could do the job.
I think the most important message to me is we need to push hard and push fast and terminate transmission as quickly as possible.
Orenstein adds that if health workers can clear the last few pockets of virus, the discussion about mutant strains and stronger vaccines would be irrelevant. Steve Barragona, VOA News, Washington.
For more on this story, please log on to our website, www.voanews.com.
And let us know your thoughts by visiting our Facebook page, VOA Asia.
And follow us on Twitter. We're at Now VOA Show.
Tomorrow way too far away, and we can't get back yesterday. But we young right now, we got right now, so get up right now, 'cause all we got is right now.
Aisha, you have a son, right?
Yes, David, and he's turning 6 this November.
Okay, now did you have to take him to school this week?
This morning, this very morning, he started his new school.
Okay, yeah. So is
and
he
KG.
Like first grade or kindergarten?
Kindergarten, yes.
Okay. Well, you know, it's kind of hard for parents to drop the little ones off with all those strangers.
Not for me, because, you know, mine is very socializing. You know, he's a very social individual. So,
okay.
Yeah.
So now did he like kind of blow you off like, oh, Mom?
Yeah, something like that.
Kind of like, I want to be my friends. Yeah.
But there was one kid crying, and, you know, the mother got a little teary-eyed.
Oh, see, that's always sad when they, I don't want to go to school, Daddy. I don't. Now, I have a question. Have you found that it's getting more expensive to rear your son?
The truth is that I'm not the kind of person who keeps a book on expenses,
right. Especially
those on my kid.
Right.
However, there are expenses, and my answer based on a rough estimate is both yes and no. Since we are aware of the expensive college education, whatever money, by the way, that we are going to save during his school years is going to go towards his college fund.
Well, you know, in its latest annual report, the U.S. Department of Agriculture says that middle-income families with a child born in 2013 can expect to spend more than $240,000 before that child turns 18.
And sending that child to college more than doubles that amount.
VOA's Deborah Block visited with a couple with one child in Alexandria, Virginia, just down the road from our headquarters here in Washington, to learn if the report reflects their lifestyle.
Eddie Bird and his wife, Gabriella, who is from Peru, dote over their only child, 5-year-old Brandy.
They make me laugh.
Her father says they spend whatever they have to for her.
You look at it as, an investment in another human being who you love very deeply.
The expenses began adding up even before Brandy was born.
You have to put together your nursery, you have to get a stroller, all of those things, and you're invested several thousand dollars.
According to the Agriculture Department report, the biggest cost of raising a child is housing, followed by childcare, education, and food. Other expenses include clothing, transportation, and activities for the child. It's all having an impact on this middle-class family in the pricey Washington, D.C. area.
We're not doing well financially. It's a struggle from month to month.
And while it's a struggle for many parents worldwide to raise children, some countries are making it easier by providing subsidized health and child care, such as Norway, Sweden, Finland, and Australia. The Birds are saving on child care costs since Gabriella is a stay-at-home mom. But like many middle-class families, they are paying for additional activities for Brandy, such as ballet and swimming classes.
It's not like when I was growing up where I could hop on my bicycle at home and ride 5 miles into town and spend the day in town, come back in the afternoon. There are bad people out there these days.
He says education is one of his biggest expenses since they decided to send Brandy to a private Catholic school. He's concerned that years from now, paying for Brandy's college education will be out of reach.
She'll have to work herself to get through college, or hopefully college won't even exist the way it does today, and there will be alternative means for her education.
Butterfly fairy.
As older parents, Bird says he and Gabriella's dream of an early retirement isn't going to happen.
We hope to return to Peru and in retirement and live there. The savings that we would have had are now going into our child and our family.
But he says it's well worth
because
the investment. Deborah Block, VOA News, Alexandria, Virginia.
To see video of this story, visit our webpage, www.voanews.com.
And let us know your thoughts by logging on to our Facebook page, VOA Asia.
And follow us on Twitter. We're at Now VOA Show.
So, David, if you promise not to ask me the same question in return, how old are you?
I'm 52.
And you plan to retire in the next 10 years, right?
I hope to. I hope to be able to, yeah.
And as more people retire each year, fewer working-age people will be there to replace them.
You know, bond rating agency Moody's says that will lead to a decline in household savings, and that will reduce global investments, which will in turn lead to slower economic growth around the world.
But as VOA's Mil Arcega tells us now, experts say it's not too late to mitigate the economic impact of the world's aging populations.
In Japan, there are special playgrounds for the elderly. In Italy, dance classes for seniors are part of the good life. And in Germany, the rapid pace of retirements has become a bigger issue than unemployment. They are the world's super-aged nations, the term for countries where at least 20% of the population is 65 years or older. Elena Dugar is head of Moody's Sovereign Risk Division.
The demographic transition is upon us now, and it's progressing by historical standards quite rapidly.
In 5 years, six more countries will join the ranks of the super-aged, and by 2030, that number will rise to 34.
That will translate into reductions in labor supply. At the same time, aging means that the household savings rates will go down, which will negatively impact on investment. Both trends put together would mean that aging will have a significant negative impact on global growth.
Business research group The Conference Board says aging could shave as much as 1% off global growth in the next 10 years. Ignoring the coming changes is risky, says economist Fariborz Gadar, author of Global Tectonics, What Every Business Needs to Know.
Economic growth rate will slow down. Jobs will not be available for the young. There are going to be conflict both internally in certain countries, externally. There'll be backlash against immigrants. That's not the kind of world we really want.
But the solution may be as close as a nation's borders. Economics professor Kishore Kulkarni spoke with VOA on Skype.
See, the largest addition to the U.S. population is by immigration. It is not by number of children.
In the U.S., the average birth rate is 1.9 children for every woman, an average bolstered by higher birth rates in immigrant families. Fariborz Gadar says the trend is obvious when you consider that the birth rate for Hispanic families in the U.S. is 2.3 children.
We are turning Hispanic. In fact, what I normally tell my audience is that if you want somebody to take care of you when you're 90, you better speak Spanish.
While consumer buying patterns will change as populations age, Kishore Kulkarni believes targeted career training and productivity gains through technology could offset the decline in workers.
It is a misalignment of the demand rather than a total and a drastic change in the demand. And it is a challenge which we can easily accept and tackle as it comes to us.
Kulkarni adds that aging will be less of a challenge in countries where elders are seen as assets rather than liabilities. But nearly all the experts say young workers in the future will work longer and retire later than seniors today. Mil Arcega, VOA News, Washington.
This might be a uniquely kind of Western problem, though,
yes,
right?
Yes, and David, did you hear what the experts said? Experts said at the end?
At the end?
At the end, that the aging will be less of a challenge in countries where elders are seen as assets rather than liabilities?
Yeah.
So I believe most of the Asian countries should be okay.
Yeah, well, yeah. See, that's the thing. Now, I was talking with one of our former co-hosts, mm-hmm. Lynn. You know, we were talking about Chinese marriage. Uh-huh. And she was saying that, you know, when you get married in China, you're not only taking care of, like, if I'm the bridegroom, I'm not only yeah. taking care of my parents, mm-hmm. I'm taking care of the bride's parents and their parents if they're still alive.
Wow.
So you got to make some money to take care of all these people, right?
Yeah.
So what do you think? Are you one of those people who is living longer than maybe your parents or your grandparents did?
Let us know your thoughts by visiting our Facebook page, VOA Asia.
And be sure to follow us on Twitter. We're at Now VOA Show.
Katy Perry, Beyonce, Adele, Taylor Swift. Just a few of the music celebrities we've interviewed on Border Crossings. Weekdays at 15 hours Universal Time on VOA Music Mix. I'm Larry London. We also play your requests and have great prizes to give away. Join us for Border Crossings Monday through Friday at 15 hours Universal Time on VOA Music Mix.
Okay, now, Aisha, you said you don't ride a bicycle. Do you have any hobbies? Do you do anything for fun?
I love to enjoy nature.
Really?
Yes.
Like taking a walk or something?
This might surprise you. Yeah, I like to take time out for hiking and fishing.
Fishing?
Yes, I love to fish.
I think we talked about that before. You like to go fishing, but it's like catch
freshwater
and release.
Fishing.
You throw them back.
Yes, yes.
Yeah, well, now, have you ever tried painting, like a landscape or a portrait or anything?
Very amateur.
Really?
Yes.
You know, I used to, when I was a kid, I tried my hand at painting, but I never really stuck with it. I used to draw all the time when I was a kid. You know, I'd be in class, and my teacher would go, what are you doing? And I'd have these elaborate drawings, you know, but I didn't keep up with it. But, you know, a couple of women from Louisiana turned their passion for making art into a profitable business.
Viewers June So and Amy Katz tell us how painting with a twist is allowing more people to express themselves and is turning a nice profit for its owners.
It is the grand opening of the latest franchise studio of Painting with a Twist. Co-founders Kathy Dino and Renee Maloney flew into Ashburn, Virginia for the event.
We thought we'd just have the one studio in our hometown of Mandeville, Louisiana, and it's now grown to 173 franchises and growing in 26 states.
The stay-at-home mothers first met at their children's kindergarten class 7 years ago.
We were looking for a way to bring some color back into our community. We were still reeling. We're from the New Orleans area. We were still reeling from Hurricane Katrina. And we came up with this idea of speed painting classes. And it was a lot of fun, and people loved it. And so we decided to start a little business.
Their studio provides art supplies, paint, canvas, brushes, and art instructors. Pairing that with wine or beer is optional.
But the beauty of this is you don't have to be an artist. You can come and know nothing about painting, and there's an artist who will teach you how to paint a painting in 2 to 3 hours. That's a twist.
Their first class in 2007 had only 7 people, but it grew steadily, and 2 years later, the entrepreneurs decided to franchise their business.
Our frequent painter customers are asking us for these studios in their towns. They think we should franchise. So our first 3 franchises came out of our customers.
Today, there are about 200 companies offering so-called paint and sip parties. An entrepreneur magazine named Painting with a Twist, the top franchise in the industry this year.
I think that what makes a business separates it from being just a regular business to being a very successful business is the passion behind it. If you love what you do, you'll never work a day in your life.
As Painting with a Twist expands, the entrepreneurs are proud that they are creating jobs.
We are the largest employer of artists in the United States outside of the school system. At this point, we have close to 1,000 artists working in our franchises.
Maloney says giving back to the community remains a core component of their business model.
Once a month, every studio in our system will team with a nonprofit in their area. And to date, we've raised over $1 million giving back to nonprofits across the country. And that probably is one of the things that we're most proud of.
Maloney and Dino expect to add 50 new locations across the nation by the end of the year. And they are working on opening up internationally soon. For producer June So, Amy Katz, VOA News.
To see video of this story, be sure to log on to our website, www.voanews.com.
And let us know what you think by visiting our Facebook page, VOA Asia.
We're also on Twitter. You can follow us at Now VOA Show. Thanks for joining us for this Wednesday edition of Now.
For more on the stories you heard, log on to our webpage, www.voanews.com.
You can also post your thoughts on our Facebook page, VOA Asia.
And be sure to follow us on Twitter at Now VOA Show.
Patrice Martin produces our program.
The managing editor of VOA English is Diane Gao.
Until next time, I'm David Byrd.
And I'm Aisha Khalid.
Join us again Monday for another edition of Now.